Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is September the 17th, 1999. And in the Koinonia Fireside Room this morning is Luther Peterson's last session called The Talents. How cautious should the church be? Let's listen in.
And let's have a word of prayer. On this beautiful day again, O God, we thank you for such marvelous weather and for opportunities to share together in this place and this time. And so again, we ask your Holy Spirit to come into us and to open our hearts and our minds to learn from you today. In Jesus' name, amen. I'd like to share with you, first of all, another one of Gerhard Frost's poems, which really speaks to our session today. It's called Look Again. I'm of the old school, and I'm against it, she said with a toss of her proud gray head. And I knew the discussion was over. I wanted to say, but friend, you forget, school isn't out yet. Living is learning, and learning is living. It's sad to see you hunker down and burrow in like that. Our world is in trouble. The good old days weren't good enough, so now we must rethink what we've accepted as true. Please look again at all you've looked at. There's more to be and to become. Well, anyway, that's just a little kind of a beginner here today. I just want to then talk a little bit about the context of this. Well, before we do that, yes, I won't. I knew there was something else. First of all, from yesterday, afterwards, someone mentioned that one of the ways that effectively deal with strong-minded types in the church is humor. We really hadn't talked about that, and I'm not going to bring it up for discussion, but I just wanted to toss that out this morning as an addition to what we talked about yesterday, dealing with people who are hard to deal with. And then there was something else that I was going to talk about today from yesterday, and I forgot what it was. Did any of you remember me, you know, visiting with me afterwards, and then me saying, we want to talk about that tomorrow, or bring it up tomorrow? Yeah, maybe that was it. Okay. And then before we proceed any further, Marjorie has done some cartoon work. She had just two up yesterday. Now we got six of them up here. Cartoons of the parables we've been looking at. And if any of you would want to do more cartoon work, feel free to do that. I'd like to collect those if you do them. But anyway, thanks, Marjorie, very much for doing that. Appreciate that.
Margie has a one-woman art show in Bellingham, Washington, which is going up on September 18th at the Watkin Museum of History and Art. And the formal opening is the evening of October 2nd.
Okay.
You live anywhere near Bellingham, Washington.
Okay. All right. Now, could all of you hear that? Do y'all get that date? The date, the opening date is...
The paintings are up September 18th. If you can, it's going to be September 18th through November 20th. And it's going to be kind of a formal party kind of opening on October 2nd.
Okay.
Evening.
All right.
At 7 o'clock.
Okay. Well, thank you. We wish you great success and luck with that. Hope everything goes great. Well, the context of the parable of the talents, before we actually read it, it's part of a section toward the end of Matthew, which includes which we call the parables of judgment. Be alert. Be prepared. The end is coming. This section includes such parables as the sheep and the goats, the seven wise and seven foolish virgins. As one preacher put it when he got to the punchline of his sermon on that one, Are you going to stay awake with the seven wise virgins or sleep with the seven foolish virgins? Okay, and some back more background here to the parable of the talents. The head of the household, or the big boss, could not stay home if he intended to protect his interests and expand his influence. Not only would he travel to his estates, but he would travel abroad in hopes of increasing his investments, initiating new business schemes, building patron-client networks, currying favor with imperial overlords, or perhaps representing the city in some official capacity. For the accumulation of his wealth, which was the basis of his power and prestige, to continue in his absence, if this were to continue to grow in his absence, he needed to entrust important portions of it to household retainers. That's what they call them, household retainers. And these were powerful people. These were not just little people. These were people of great ability, and they were given a lot of responsibility. They were sometimes called household slaves, but they were not slaves in any shape of the imagination, stretch of the imagination that we could think of today. They were dependent upon their patron, master, and that's the only reason they might have been called slaves. Okay, with that little bit of a background, let's read Matthew 25, 14 through 30. I think it's really one long paragraph again, so I'd like to have one of you read the whole thing.
Like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked and lazy servant, so you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Thank you. And some more background information here. The people around Jesus, what would surprise them about this parable? A couple of things. First of all, the amount entrusted to the servants. A talent was about 15 years' wages. And secondly, in the Jewish tradition, it was appropriate to bury money in the ground for safekeeping. And the people would have thought, well, what's wrong with burying the money? Okay, now let me just ask, what are some of the things that strike you in this parable? Let's just talk about it a little bit. Anybody? Or some of the teachings, let's put it this way. What are some of the teachings of this parable? There are quite a few, but what are some of them?
To use your talents wisely.
Use your talents wisely, okay.
It was interesting that it was stated that he gave to each man according to his ability. Now, ability.
Okay.
How did he know the one had more ability than the other? And what does this mean?
Okay, he gave them according to their ability. And how did he know if some had more ability than others?
Well, they've been working for him.
They'd been working for him, yeah. So he had come to know them. And what they could do, I suppose. Okay?
If they knew as much as they'd been taught.
They knew as much as they'd been taught?
And he was aware of that.
And he was aware of it, okay.
He was their teacher.
He was their teacher.
I think that God gives everyone native gifts of different kinds and different abilities and kind of expects us to use them. And that's how I see it.
Okay. All right. God gives us varying talents and expects us to use them. Ruth? All right, Sonia?
There isn't an element of surprise when you look at it. He gave the one that hid the money one talent. And there's something about self-confidence there that the others had to go ahead and he was trying to figure out what the master wanted him to do.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have confidence.
He didn't have confidence. He gave the person he gave one talent to is obviously he was kind of, wasn't so sure what this guy would do anyway. Okay, Ruth?
He didn't have self-confidence or confidence in his master.
Either one.
He was accusing the master. You're hard. You sow where you don't reap.
Okay.
That isn't your money. It's the person, you know, we were the ones that did the work for you. There wasn't a good relationship between the master. It was just...
He didn't have much confidence either in himself or the master, and not a whole lot of enthusiasm about what this whole business was all about.
I think that's where a heck of a lot of us in the church stand. We have to have our confidence from the amount of money we have, or the amount of assurance we have, or amount of rather than trusting that God's going to take care of us and put our money to work in the mission field or wherever his work is being done to glorify his name.
Okay, what you're saying is that there really can be not much faith without adventure. God can find little use for the shut mind. This useless servant, or this one servant, took and buried his money, buried the talent in the ground, in order that he might hand it back to the master exactly as it was. And the whole aim of the scribes and Pharisees was to keep the law exactly as it was. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if this relates, but it's an interesting thing that happened with people that buried their money in the ground. It took place during the Depression, Great Depression. My dad was in business, early in business, and was being foreclosed on, would lose his homes and his garage and everything. And of course, there was nothing from banks that could save him. And the people that came forth and helped Dad to weather the Depression were the lumberjacks out in the woods who had known Dad as an honest man of integrity. They dug their money up out of the ground because they didn't trust banks in their mattresses or whatever it was. They saved our home and our business. Now, I mean, that's somebody that has put it in the ground, but then used it in a wonderful way.
Okay, yeah, they hid the money in the ground, but then they invested it. Okay, because they had confidence.
Yeah,
very good.
And investing it, they didn't invest it to get gain.
No.
They had invested it just to help something.
Right, because they had confidence, though.
They had confidence.
You bet, yeah. All right, yes, back there.
I think perhaps, too, he was afraid if he lost all of his money, then what would the master do also?
Okay. He was afraid if he lost all his money, then what would the master do also? I want to say some more about that. Kind of expand on your point.
I think he was afraid of the consequences if he lost everything.
Oh, okay.
At least he had what was given to him.
Yeah, okay. We need to be as daring in our faith as we are in business, in other words. Most anyone can see the logic of investment in the business world. But many of these same people fail to take any risk in their faith life. Yeah, okay.
Operating out of fear instead of out of love for the master.
Right, mm-hmm. Out of fear. Yeah.
Well, as artists sometimes, taking a talent literally, I feel sometimes if you can't be Picasso or, you know, you look at other artists around, they're extremely talented, and sometimes you just feel like giving up because, you know, you feel if you can't be Picasso, why bother?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, this whole business of envying other people's gifts, that's another whole thing that this parable is all about. And of course, Paul talks about this a lot in both 1 Corinthians and Romans, as he talks about gifts of the Spirit. And these differences in gifts can sometimes paralyze us. We see the many gifts that that someone else has, and we admire these many talented people. A lot of very many talented people up here at the village, musicians and whatnot. And so, what good are we in comparison to them, we say to ourselves? They have so much, and we have so little. If only we could be like them. You know, that's how we could so easily think that way. Yeah, other comments?
This saying he's brought back exactly what he had been given, maybe inflation had been invented at that time, but
yeah.
You can't do that.
yeah, that's right. Maybe, how does inflation play in there? I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the master rewarded both the one with the five and the one with the two exactly the same.
Okay. Interesting.
Exactly.
What does that have to say, I wonder? You want to say some more about that?
It goes back to one of the other ones where the sower of the seeds gets 30-fold or 60-fold or 100-fold.
Okay.
What we can return to the Lord isn't, everybody can't do the same. As long as whatever level is we can give, if that's the best we can do, that's acceptable.
Okay. You all heard that. All right, other comments, other things we might, yes.
I'm thinking of the man again that buried his talent and then gave it back. But you know, sometimes if the Lord has given you a gift, a talent, and you don't use it, you lose it.
You use it, that's it. That's another teaching there, yes. Use it or lose it. And verse 29 says that very clearly, doesn't it? Okay, thank you. Yes.
I think that we have to be more active Christians. We do a lot of talking, but I think we have to express it in the lives we lead. There are two expressions I'd like to share. One of them is that the only sermon some people will ever hear is the one they see when they watch how you act.
Okay, the only sermon that some people will ever hear is the one they see in the way you act. Okay?
And I got another one. If you were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you?
Okay, you all heard that. All right. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I think one of the things in the parable teaches is that God entrusts to us far more than most of us ever realize. Even the one with one talent had 15 years worth of wages to handle. I mean, that's overwhelming.
Yeah.
So I think it's telling us that every one of us have been given far more than we probably recognize.
Okay.
We're very privileged.
Yes, don't sell yourself short. So easy to do, the low self-esteem group, yes. Thank you. Other things that we learned from this parable that you can think of? Well, one thing is that excuses can be dangerous. These two guys were up fishing, George and Sam, and they were all of a sudden George said, "You know, we really shouldn't be up here fishing because our pastor is back there working so hard on this revival meeting that's going on tonight. And, you know, my conscience is bothering me because we really ought to be there. And Sam said, well, if we were home, I still wouldn't be there. And he said, well, George says, why is that? He says, well, my wife is sick. Well, and also, if work is well done, then much more will be added. Much more will be added. The reward, that's the reward. Reward for work well done is that there is still more to do. As these five and two talent men were experiencing. Any other things strike you in this parable, or lessons that we might learn from this parable that any of you can think of? Okay, there's much more, of course, but that's at least a tiny beginning of all the things that
seems to say, yeah, that if that we all have gifts, and that if we use them, then we will. There's a sort of natural reward of that. It might not be making a lot of money, whatever, but if we don't, then
okay,
we're throwing away what God has given us.
Okay, did you all hear that? Okay, Dorothy?
I was thinking of how sometimes you receive a call from the Lord to do something that you don't feel that you are equipped to take it, but somehow you always become equipped. If God calls, He equips you.
Okay.
And that's I don't know if it's discovering talents you had and you didn't realize you had, or whether He was adding talents at that point.
All right. God can equip us after we, even if we aren't sure sometimes, if we have the call. Yes.
Sometimes that equipping is getting in touch with other people who have what is needed.
Okay.
And working together.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. You all hear that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Other thoughts? Ruth?
I wonder if, I don't know if this parable is saying that, but I think sometimes we don't even realize what our talents are, that and God is using them, as long as we are asking God to use us as He would. I think he puts us to use in ways that we're not even aware of sometimes.
Yeah, this is right. And, you know, several of you have said this in different ways, that we may not be aware of what we've got at all. And we need to really be careful and pray about these things and be open to the possibility that we can do some things that we never thought we could do. Okay, other comments here. Well, then we are ready to put on another little skit. We did one on Tuesday, and I've got one for us to do today. And I need seven people with loud voices. And I'm going to name the characters here, and raise your hand if you'd like to try out for one of these. Okay. Okay. Anne. First one is Anne. She's a young teenager. Who'd like to play that part? Okay. All right. Okay. The next one is Uncle Henry. He's middle-aged or older and very conservative. Who'd like to play the part? Don't be bashful. Okay, here we go. Okay. The third one is Henry, who, when he was younger. Okay, send this one back there. Okay, the fourth one is... The fourth one is Janet. Janet, a younger woman. Janet. Oh, okay. Okay, and then we have Mr. Johnson, who is a businessman. Mr. Johnson, who is a businessman. Who'd like to play that part? Okay, just a few more here. Come on, don't be bashful. Okay.
We don't know if we have the talent.
Oh. Well, we're going to find out. Okay. The next one is Mrs. Lehman, a middle-aged widow. Okay. All right. Then we have the pastor. Now, I don't want to play that part. The pastor. The age isn't important, it says. Okay. I believe that is it. There's a guitarist here too. Well, yeah, maybe the guitarist. Who? You don't have to play a guitar or sing, but just read the lyrics of the little parts that come in with a guitar refrain. Who'd like to read those? Guitar. Okay, back here. Okay. And I'll just kind of be the narrator, to read the in-between lines, the telling whether people are standing up or sitting down or what they're doing. This one's called The Man Who Played It Safe. And the author of these books is William Povey, who wrote a lot of chancel dramas on parables as well as other kinds of things. He taught at Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque and retired in Texas,
San Antonio.
Evelyn knows him, and he's now passed away. But his stuff is very fun to do and gets across some good stuff. So let's begin. As the scene opens, Uncle Henry is sitting at a chair reading. And then Anne enters. Okay. Go ahead, Anne.
Uncle Henry, will you play my new game with me? I got it for my birthday, but I haven't played it yet. Everybody seems too busy to play.
No, Anne, I was just getting settled down to watch some TV.
Oh, come on. You can see all those programs on the reruns anyway. But you won't always have a chance to play a new game with your favorite niece.
You're my only niece. But I suppose I can take a few minutes for a game. The card table is set up, so we might as well play here. What's the game called?
It's called Play It Safe. I'll go get it.
Uncle, grumbling to himself, says,
Play It Safe. Sounds like a game that'll make you think. Whatever happened to Parcheesi, an old maid?
Okay, Anne reappears.
Here it is.
And sets up a pile of cards, and Uncle moves up to the table.
Looks complicated to me.
No, it's real easy. You have to make four choices in the game. So you get four piles of cards to keep or make grow. These are your love cards.
And puts the pile in front of Uncle. Yeah. Go ahead.
Are you sure this is a game for people of your age?
Oh, Uncle, here are your career cards. These are the investment cards, and these are the service cards. Now we're ready.
Where are your cards? Don't you get any?
Oh, I'm the dealer. I read the choice cards, and then you have to decide whether you want to play it safe or risk your pile. If you play it safe, nothing happens, and we go on to the next choice. If you decide to risk it, I read one of those other cards, and you may double your pile or lose it all. Do you understand?
I'll catch on as we play. You read the cards, but I have to decide. Is that it?
Right. And I've got some real surprises in this pile of action cards.
I'll bet you have. Let's get it over with.
All right. The first decision involves your love cards. You're engaged to a beautiful young woman, but you're not making too much money. If you marry her, you may have a hard time financially. But if you don't, you may lose her. What do? Marry her or play it safe?
That'll take some thinking. I never did get married, you know. Let me see.
Okay, he leans back, closing his eyes as if dreaming. Brief scene follows as if Uncle is dreaming. Scene may be spotlight. Well, that's just not necessary. Okay, now we have these. He's dreaming now, and here comes the next scene. Okay, Janet enters.
Henry.
Yes, Janet.
Why are you standing in the doorway like that? Come in.
I was just thinking.
A penny for your thoughts.
I guess they aren't worth any more than that. Look, Janet, I came over tonight because I've come to a decision about our marriage. I guess I might as well blurt it out right away.
Oh, do you want to set the date tonight?
No, not that. Janet, I've been going over our financial affairs, and we just don't seem to have enough money to get married right now.
Henry, we've discussed this before. I'm willing to live on what we both make, or even your salary alone.
But we wouldn't be able to afford much furniture or the nice house I've planned for us.
Is that so important?
Well, maybe it doesn't seem so now, but later we would find out it did make a difference. I think we'd better play it safe and wait for a while.
You don't want to take the risk?
I think it would be foolish.
Well, maybe you're right. I don't want to do anything foolish.
Okay, then that scene ends. Guitarist.
Play it safe, friends. Take no chances. That's the way you make advances. Don't be stupid. Fools rush in. You'll not fail if you don't begin.
Okay, now we're back to the original one, Anne and Uncle Henry. Anne?
What are you going to do, Uncle Henry? You have to decide.
I did decide. I mean, I'm going to play it safe. That's my decision. And I get to keep all that first pot of cards, don't I?
Oh, yes. You keep them all. Nothing gained, nothing lost.
Good. I'll bet you had some mean cards in that other pile if I'd risked it. Like divorce, alimony, or bankruptcy. Or twins. Maybe that's the same thing.
I'm not going to tell you. We'll go to the next question. This time, it concerns the career cards. Now, you have to decide what you want to do with your life. You can enter a local business where advancement will be slow and steady. Or you can accept a job in another country where the risks are great, but where you can help a lot of people. Which do you choose? Will you play it safe or take a risk?
I'm not sure I like this game. Makes me think about things I've tried to forget.
Okay, he sinks back in his chair as before, and another, he's dreaming and thinking now. Okay, the next, go ahead.
Henry!
Yes, Mr. Johnson?
Young man, I've got great news for you. You know, we've been thinking about going into South America with our farm equipment tools. We think it's a good market. And besides, there are millions of people there who need to learn to be better farmers. This is a chance to help a whole continent of people, and we've decided to offer the job to you.
Me?
Yes, Henry, we think that you have the ability to make our company a success down there and to aid those people.
Do I have to do it?
Oh, no. You can stay here at your present job, only you won't advance very fast here. Lots of other bright young men in the company. It seems to me that this is a good opportunity for you. Of course, we can't guarantee success. It's a bit of a gamble, but a good one.
Well, it sounds pretty good to me.
You mean you'll take it?
Yes, sir. Nothing risked, nothing gained. I'll take it, sir.
Fine.
Well, what are you going to do, Uncle Henry?
I think I'm going to risk it.
Oh. Then I'll turn over the action card and see whether you won or lost.
No, wait a minute. I'm not sure.
Mr. Johnson, I've changed my mind. I think I'd rather stay here and work.
Play it safe, friends. Take no chances. That's the way you make advances. Don't be stupid. Fools rush in. You'll not fail if you don't begin. Well?
I've changed my mind. I think I'll play it safe.
Somehow I thought that would be the way you'd decide. All right, two more chances left. This time it's investments. You have a chance to buy some valuable property from a widow who needs the money badly. The value depends on whether a highway will be built past the property. Do you invest or do you play it safe?
Hmm. Now you're talking real money. Do I invest or don't I? Maybe this widow is trying to take advantage of me.
Now he dreams again. He's thinking. Okay.
Henry, I'm here because you were such a good friend of my late husband. I'm going to have to sell my property, and I want to give you first refusal on it. They tell me a new highway may be built right past my front doorstep, so I'd like to hold on to the property, but I can't do it.
I've heard some rumors about that highway. Of course, it's still just talk.
Oh, I know that. But I think the property is a good investment anyway, and I'd like you to have it if you can see your way clear to paying my price.
There's a risk involved, Mrs. Lehman.
I know. There's a risk involved in almost anything in life, but I thought maybe you would be willing to risk a little.
Mrs. Lehman, I'm a man who likes to play things safe. I'm not a gambler, not a plunger. I appreciate your kind offer, but I think I'm going to have to say no.
You know your business best, Henry. Good day to you.
Good day, Mrs. Lehman.
Play it safe, friends. Take no chances. That's the way you make advances. Don't be stupid. Fools rush in. You'll not fail if you don't begin.
I'm waiting, Uncle.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was dreaming for a moment that seems like I'm ahead of it in this game. Haven't lost anything yet. So I think I'll play this one safe, too.
Too bad. I peeked at the action card, and it said you would have doubled your money if you had bought the land. All right, last chance to run a risk. This one is about service. You are approached by the pastor to take charge of the Boy Scout troop. The boys need a leader, and you seem the most eligible man in the church to take the job. But you will have to haul the boys around in your car, and you'll have to attend a lot of meetings. Do you accept the job, or play it safe?
Well, that one doesn't seem too difficult after the others. But let me think a moment.
Okay, he's sort of thinking again, he's dreaming. Okay, next.
Henry, we need your help. We've got 20 boys in the church who want us to organize a Boy Scout troop. I know you were a scout when you were young, and you seem to be the ideal person to take this job. How about it?
No, Pastor, I'm not interested. Boys today can be a lot of trouble.
I imagine you were a bit of trouble yourself when you were young. We don't get much accomplished in this life if we don't put up with a little trouble.
Pastor, I've learned to take things easy in this life and not stick my neck out.
But Henry...
It's no use. Boys can be a real headache. I'd have to drive them around in my car. They'd start fights and get gum all over the upholstery. And if I should have an accident, no telling what that could lead to. If they don't mind, Pastor, I'd rather play it safe.
You have the time, Henry.
But not the inclination. The answer is no.
Play it safe, friend. Take no chances. That's the way you make advances. Don't be stupid. Fools rush in. You'll not fail if you don't begin.
Uncle Henry, it's time you decide.
But I decided the minute you started reading the card. I'm playing this one safe, too. That means I didn't lose a single game. I got all the cards you gave me at the start, so I guess I win.
Not so fast. There is a special card for the player who plays it safe every time. Let me read it to you. You think you win, but you lose. You received love and talents and time and money at the beginning of the game, but you didn't do anything with them. You simply played it safe. And there is no bonus for that.
all the cards you held are taken away from you.
She sweeps them away.
You end up with nothing. Life is to be lived, not wasted or kept. You were very foolish.
You mean I lose it because I didn't risk anything?
That's what the card says.
This is a stupid game.
Are you sure it's the game that's stupid?
Okay, let's give him a hand. Okay, any reactions to that? Well, let's not react to it. Let me.
Good actress.
Yeah, very good. That's great job. Yeah, I'd like to then share with you a little bit from Cotton Patch Parables of Liberation, as Clarence Jordan tells the story in his own words. Jesus tells this story to his followers while they were on their way to Jerusalem near the end of his ministry. It was the last week, and Jesus had been talking about the revolution and so forth, and his disciples were all excited, and they were wondering whether they were going to have a press conference, take over the airport, telephone exchange, and there was excitement in the air. Perhaps the revolution was about to burst out immediately with overwhelming force. And to answer that kind of thinking, Jesus told the parable of the talents. I've heard so many sermons preached on this idea, give your talents to the Lord. They got that thing backwards. The Lord gave his talents to us. A talent is not some skill we go around saying he's a good athlete. He should consecrate his talent to the Lord. She's a great organist. She should be an organist for the Lord. But this isn't what Jesus is saying. What are these talents? Are they money? No. Jesus had no money to give. What did he have? What is the stock in trade of a great teacher? It's his ideas, his concepts, his teaching. He leaves them to his followers. All these 3 years, he has been talenting them. Now he's saying, you want me to come in here and pull some angels out of the sky and set up a revolution? Oh, no. I've been giving you over all these months together the currency of the kingdom, and if it comes, it's going to come by your doing business with what I've turned over to you. To us, he says, I've given over to you the idea of brotherhood. And some of us can say, yes, Lord, I got out and dealt with that idea and multiplied it. But there are others of us who turn in an accounting like this. Yes, Lord, I remembered you talking about brotherhood, but you know, I was scared. I started to preach a sermon on that race relations Sunday, but Deacon Jones said, You know, I didn't want to upset the deacon. No point breaking up your church. Besides, Deacon Jones, he's one of our major tithers, and he's got something to tithe. So, Lord, I was scared. I was scared of this whole proposition, and I buried this idea of brotherhood. I gave you the idea of peace. Yes, Lord, but you don't understand the civilization we live in. You got to talk force. Force is the only language most folks understand today. Really, it's the only language people know how to talk. So, Lord, I had a chance to witness for peace, but I was kind of scared somebody might identify me with one of those flower children, and I just buried the whole thought. We've all been given ideas, perhaps not in equal proportion to others. Maybe we haven't done any postgraduate work, but we've got hold of some explosive ideas. But we say, I might lose out trading on these. I might lose my neck or my job or my house. And you're right. This is risk capital Jesus has given to us. But that doesn't excuse us from activity. This little old fellow in the parable didn't steal anything from his boss. In fact, he restored everything. He just didn't do what he was told to do. Discussing talents isn't a test of talent activity. This assistant had read a book on talent preservation. He had read a book on economics. He was quite knowledgeable on the present value of the talent. He held conferences on inflation and deflation of the talent. He just never got out to work. He just never put it out there and traded with it. Now, let me tell you, we don't have much more time to do business with the kingdom ideas. It's later than we think. We've caught a glimpse of the gold in God's storehouse. The time of harvest is here. If we don't get off our back ends and start doing something with these ideas, God Almighty is going to take these talents that he's turned over to the church and give them to a people that will bring forth the fruits. And they might not be a people that we will agree with. Any reactions to that? Comments? Okay. Just a comment on the tree of life, that comes in here too. In Revelation, especially the Revelation is a great vision of what is to come. The people who are suffering, people who are have not a lot of confidence in themselves because of all of the pressure that's being put on them, and they have really a tough time going. And this book of Revelation comes with a great vision of what is to come. That everything is worth it. It's worth being a Christian. It's worth investing in the kingdom, no matter what happens. And then at the end of the book, toward the end of the book, it says that nothing shall be detracted or taken from this book. The author says, I don't want anything changed or taken from this vision. In other words, that vision is out there, and we must not detract from it. And we also talk about sometimes without a vision, the people perish. And so part of the problem with this one talent guy is that he had no vision. Yeah, he had no vision as to what his investing in the kingdom would do ultimately. And we could also say he had no vision of what investing in the kingdom could do in the short term. And so we need to really think about those kinds of things. We need to realize that this tree of life, it says if you will invest yourself in the vision, if you do not detract from all of this, you will receive the tree of life. That this is a part of the reward of having a vision. This one talent guy just didn't have any vision. He had lost his vision. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, do we really have a hold of a vision of what can be done with these abilities and talents and these ideas in these things that God has given us? Do you have an inkling of that or not?
I'm just a thought that there's encouragement of others, too, and discouragement, like in school or church.
Yeah. That's right. We could add that to it, too. Right. To the original. Yeah. Lots of things that can discourage us. Right. Here's a little... go ahead.
How do we... I think many of us don't realize that we might be destroying the vision for others when we act as if we are trusting our wealth or the things that we attain, our wealth or our joys, or when we spend our lives in ways that are not fulfilling the kingdom. And that's no matter what field of work we're in. If we're not living out that vision, we are distracting from it, because kids over and over again will say to their parents, well, you know, look at you, you know?
Yeah.
And what's your sermon, you know?
Okay, we claim we're a Christian, but we don't invest anything, and that detracts instead of just leaves everything the same. Okay. Any other thoughts here? Okay.
I also think there's the quiet witness within many of us. My father was one of those who was, he didn't do a lot of talking, but probably dovetail on what Erling said, his life was lived.
Okay.
Like that of a quietness. And he did have people approach him because of that and ask about Christ and everything, because he was...
Yeah, he lived it out.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Probably a lot more effective than the ones who said, "Are you saved?"
Okay.
My mother was much the same way. Just I knew by the Bible at our bedside that was her mainstay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, you want?
Yeah, I was thinking of the thought of even congregations or individual churches. Their talents are scoped by their surroundings, whether they're a small country church where many times the talents are need to be geared for what is around their culture of where that congregation is at, or a inner church, a downtown church like a New York or large metropolitan area, have, in a sense, a different way of dealing with the talents of the congregation of where their surroundings are.
Okay, let me see if I can recapitulate what you're saying here, that this is also true of congregations, not just people. And then in each congregation has its own special gifts or opportunities, and they must not lose the vision of what can be done with their whatever gifts they have. Is that what you're saying?
Of their surroundings.
And their surroundings.
In a all-farm neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay. It would be different than a inner city New York downtown.
Yeah. Well, by the way, this is Mark, and Mark is a Native American, and is going to give a 2 o'clock session today on Native American spirituality. Mark came up here this past weekend, and we managed to get him on the program. And so I'd encourage you to get to his session. That's going to be right here, I imagine. And Mark has a lot of contacts, and he's had a lot of experience working with the ELCA at national level, synod levels, and all other kinds of ways. Very knowledgeable, and one of our very active ELCA people. So I think it's a little commercial. I thought you wouldn't mind that today. I'd like to share with you let's get a couple more. Yeah.
The parable originally used money, and we have gotten into other aspects of talents. But also in terms of risk-taking, since you mentioned ELCA, there is a mission investment fund, and there are also annuities where you say, well, is that a risk? Will the church hold up? But I want to commend the mission investment fund, which is exactly this kind of thing. You take a risk, okay, maybe it's not a safe place to put it, but it's doing very well financially.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Those of you who are involved in that church, and there may be others.
Thank you, Evelyn. A little commercial for the Mission Investment Fund of the ELCA.
Churches. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
The Mission Investment Fund is currently helping us build a new education building.
Right.
Without them, I'm not sure where we would have gotten the money.
Ah.
Very good. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about some churches are able to send thousands of dollars to another country, to Madagascar or China or wherever, and help in different ways, or perhaps somebody from the congregation goes as a missionary or something. But it can be doing what you're supposed to be doing in that situation, that church in that situation. We have a little small church in the area that has an ice cream social every the last part of August every year. And it's just a little thing, maybe, compared to bigger things, or however you want to look at it. but that's homemade ice cream, and it's a social event, and everybody gets together, and they look forward to it, and it's a good thing. I think that's what that church is supposed to be doing in that setting.
Okay, thank you. And that just triggered something for me, because when you talk about funding for local needs, I thought of staff. And how often we hesitate to put on more staff. And that reminded me of pastors, and that reminded me of the fact that the second thing I was trying to remember this morning was that some of most difficult people to work with in a congregation because they're so strong-minded are pastors. Somebody mentioned that to me yesterday. Okay. I've got that one. Yeah, Ruth?
The other thing I think Mark was saying, that no task is too small, investing ourselves not as duty, but as obviously, joyfully glad for the opportunity. I remember one of the most meaningful witnesses of my pastor father was that when we were all together as a family, we hadn't been together for a while, and he was so filled with joy with this, he says, let's thank God. And it was that kind of spirit, rather than, oh, we're supposed to have emotions now, sit down and be quiet, you know.
Okay. We're here.
We have all, in various ways, expressed our whatever, so we are talking the talk, okay? When we get down to the boat to go home, are we willing to walk the walk?
Okay, all right, that leads in nicely to what I was just gonna say next. Yeah, Ruth, go ahead.
Another along that same line, the risk of encouraging our congressmen and our nation to forgive the debts of the third world countries, to writing them and telling them that we don't need to have that interest if you can pay back the bulk and taking this load off of those third world countries that are causing starvation and death for so many.
Yeah, okay, just before I pick up on what you said though, let me just tell a little different twist, tell this parable with a little different twist. It's by Bill White. He wrote Stories for the Journey. Once there was a businessman who entrusted his property to his employees. To one servant he gave $5,000, to a second $2,000, and a third $1,000. The first two invested the money and returned 100 cents on the dollar, while the third employee buried the money in the earth. On the day of accounting, he returned the original money to the master and was soundly chastised for failing to invest wisely. A fourth employee was given $3,000 to invest. He returned several days after the accounting took place and approached the master cautiously. I invested the money that you left with me, he confessed, but the investment turned sour. Not only has your money gained no interest, I have lost nearly $1,000 of the amount you entrusted to me. The master smiled at his worried servant. Well done, good and faithful servant. You invested as you were commanded. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. And then this little thing, Clovis Chapel was a preacher who was famous in the old days, I suppose, in the early part of the century. Maybe some of you can remember when he preached. But anyway, he had a lot of his sermons are in print, and he preached on this parable once. I'd like to share with you a few of his thoughts. He talks about the one talent servant saying, "I was afraid." Then he talks about how our fears may paralyze us from investing in the kingdom. And what are we afraid of, he asks. Okay, he says, first of all, for one thing, we may be afraid of ourselves. We so easily forget that each of us has different talents. He tells how once a child who could draw well asked him to draw something. "What do you want me to draw?" He looked me over and finally he said, "Draw me a mule." Now, I should have been able to do that. I grew up with them. I plowed with them. I preached to them. I had them on my official board. I was a mule expert. Yet when I drew the best mule I knew how, it so offended his artistic sense that I thought for a while he was going to burst into tears. We're always pining because we aren't like the other folks. It would be terrible if we were all alike. For instance, suppose everybody looked like me. The second thing he was afraid of, he was afraid to ruin his pride by making a mistake. Now, there are thousands of things that are worth making mistakes for. A man was asked, "Are you a Christian?" He replied, "I tried it once." Anyone who does a thing well has done it at the price of failing 1,000 times. Thirdly, it could be he was afraid of work. There are thousands of people who can't understand why they aren't exuberant in the faith. When they haven't entertained the thought of putting themselves to the slightest discomfort for the kingdom. A lot of people do not want to be asked to do anything that is hard to do. And he told the story. He was new in this parish. A young woman came up one Sunday. She asked me, "Are you it?" "Yes, I'm the new pastor." And she put on the most sanctimonious tone I've ever heard. She said, "You know, I just love to work for the Lord all the time." "I'm glad to hear that. There's a new family that just moved in across the street. I need to have someone go over and invite them and bring them to church." She started to hem and haw. I tried to talk her into it, like trying to be fast enough to head off a mule. She finally said no, it wouldn't be convenient. She was afraid of work. Jesus was most critical not of people who robbed and murdered, etc., but of the one who was good, but not good for anything in particular. This one talent man didn't lose his money gambling or in some wild spree. He just did nothing. Harmless is not the same as holiness. It's a million miles from it. People who have helped me most haven't been the five talent people, but people who were faithful and not afraid. It's time for lunch. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being with us this week.
Thank you.